thanks for tuning in to Bear Soup. We have a Bustin' at the Guts show bubbling up for you this week in the Bear Soup hot tub, so listen up, Bears. Announcing a CD giveaway contest from Bear Soup and BearRadio.net. The concluding part of Peter Casciarelli's gay fairy tale, Wolf Soup. Shoutouts, announcements, and the usual Ursine Audio claptrap. We're locked and loaded, so stand back. You're just in time for Bear Soup. Welcome to Bear Soup, news, interviews, skews, and schmooze for the online Ursine community. This is your host, Ron Serratia, casting my pod to you through the mysterious tubes of the internets from southeastern coastal Connecticut, USA, wishing you a very happy, fun, and safe Passover. You're listening to the Reciprocality episode number 69 of the Bear Soup podcast, streaming online at BearRadio.net, Mondays and Wednesdays, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. Bear Soup is also available through our free iTunes subscription and download service. You can access the Bear Soup archives through the Bear Soup tab on ronserratia.com. That's spelled R-O-N-S-U-R-E-S-H-A. Presumably you can tell without seeing me that I'm recording this stark raving naked in a steamy outdoor hot tub, because that's what the rubber duckies are for. Clothing optional. Bear Soup, as always, is sponsored by the Biblio Bears at Bare Bones Books. Please check out their fine titles by Bear authors at barebonesbooks.com. I'm delighted to announce that for our Bear Soup episode number 69, our Reciprocality show, a contest, a CD giveaway contest from BearRadio.net and Bear Soup. The first two correct answers, whose names and cities will be announced next show, will receive a copy of Leslie Ann's fabulous Queen of the World CD, which is featured in the background of this program. And you'll also get a fabulous Bear Radio rectangle magnet for your refrigerator, of course, because no one possibly has enough refrigerator magnets. So enjoy the program, listen for the questions, and good luck.
I said I want to spread the news, that if it feels this could get news, you just keep on using me.
So here we have the conclusion of Peter Casciarelli's story, Wolf Soup, from his book, Gay Fairy and Folk Tales, which is unfortunately out of print. But I'm delighted to be able to bring it to you again. I mean, how perfect is a story, Wolf Soup, for this program? The forest seemed all the gloomier after the sunny glade. Birds called, like sudden questions demanded of Richard from the canopy of leaves overhead, startling him. Sometimes it sounded as if someone were laughing at him, though he couldn't imagine why, and even felt a little indignant about it. Then he realized that he actually was hearing laughter from just up ahead. Laughter and rough, heavy voices. They were voices he had heard many times before, and the sound made him want to become invisible. "Maybe the path won't go by them," he said to himself hopefully. But when he came around the next large tree, there were Clarence and his two apprentice bullies. Clayton and Clifton were hard at work, building basic skills, knocking each other over down in the dirt, while Clarence monitored their progress.
"You need to loosen up and have more fun with it, Cliff," Clarence advised.
Then he saw Richard, and his face lit up.
"Cupcake," he crowed.
"Cupcake,"
chimed Clayton and Clifton. They didn't have Clarence's exuberance, but they were learning.
Hi,
said Richard nervously. Clarence came up and put his face directly into Richard's, grinning. Clayton took hold of the wicker basket.
"I have to get to my grandmother's,"
Richard said, having trouble making his voice louder than a murmur.
"Let me by."
"I'll let you by," laughed Clarence, pushing Richard hard so that he fell over Clifton, who had gotten down on his hands and knees behind him.
Clayton snatched the basket as he fell.
"I'll let you buy back your basket after I eat what's inside, cupcake."
"That's a good one,"
said Clifton wistfully, getting to his feet.
"I don't think I'll ever get your verbal fluidity."
You have to be in the moment," Clarence told him.
Suddenly the three bullies looked beyond Richard, their eyes widening in amazement, their jaws dropping open in similar response. For just a second, Richard thought that they were looking at him in a newly respectful and attentive manner, though he couldn't imagine why. Then he heard a low, menacing growl behind him. He turned and looked over his shoulder. An animal had emerged from the bushes, an enormous yet lean beast whose red fur struck a startling contrast against all the greenery. It snarled, showing long rows of teeth meant for rending and tearing its prey, and then, terrifyingly, rose up onto its hind legs taller than the tallest man and took a slow, stalking step forward.
"Wolf!"
shrieked Clarence. Eyes blazing, the wolf gave a deafening growl, and the three boys scattered, dropping the basket. But because he was paralyzed with fear, and also because the wolf's blazing eyes weren't focused on him, but tracked the fleeing boys, Richard noticed something he wouldn't have had he followed his natural inclination to run in a panic through the forest. The wolf was beautiful. It wasn't just his soft red fur that mesmerized Richard, or the power in his long, sinewy body as he stood there on his hind legs, roaring like the end of the world. But there was a presence the wolf possessed, a quality of wildness, as if he were the lord of his own life, and the whole world were his territory. As the cries of Clarence, Clayton, and Clifton faded away among the trees, the wolf underwent a strange transformation. His snarl of rage melted into a mischievous grin. The murderous light in his eyes became just a twinkle, and he braced his big claw-tipped paws on his haunches and rocked back and forth, hooting with laughter. Richard thought that now the wolf looked almost like an uncle, that familiar and friendly if you ever had an uncle who dressed in rich red fur and possessed the features of a laughing wolf, as well as a long, soft tail curled like a question mark behind him. Well, perhaps on second thought, the wolf wasn't anything like an uncle at all, but he certainly was enjoying himself.
"Oh, honey,"
he gasped.
"Those girls know how to run or what?"
He winked at Richard through his fit of hilarity, inviting him to join in, but Richard just stared at him, speechless. At last, the wolf subsided into giggles, wiping his eyes with the back of his paw. Sighed contentedly, then made a little song of it.
"Too much fun keeps me young. Don't forget your basket, hon."
He gave Richard a smile that was very charming, considering the number of sharp white teeth that composed it. Then he stepped back into the bushes and vanished from sight. Richard quickly retrieved his basket and hurried along the path. "It's true," he said to himself, still trembling with amazement. "There is a wolf, and he's only dangerous to Clarence, not to me."
and for the first time since he could remember, Richard felt glad to be different. He felt special. Even so, the way was very long. Richard kept walking. The path was still difficult to see sometimes, ending at a fallen log here and only picking up over there after a long and sometimes frustrating search. It seemed to go on between the trees forever, and, as often happened when he began a challenging or daunting project that couldn't be accomplished quickly, Richard grew fretful and irritable, and he cast about for an excuse to stop and go back the way he had come. As he began following yet another bend in the narrow little path, he told himself that if his grandmother's cottage didn't come into view in the next few minutes, he would take that as a sign that he was on the wrong path and just go home. Then Richard saw the wolf again. He was lounging against a tree, filing his claws with a nail file as if there were no more important thing to do in all the world. He gave Richard a glance, but didn't seem to recognize him from their earlier encounter, and returned to his manicure. But the glance turned Richard's heart into a flock of doves that went winging around and around in his chest, and he felt very hopeful and very confused. "Oh, wouldn't it be great if he liked me?" he thought. Suddenly he wanted to be with the wolf all the time, for the two of them to live together in the village, kiss each other, go to the movies, and walk down the streets together deep in intimate conversation. If ever there were anyone who could protect and defend Richard and stand up for him against the whole village if need be, surely it was the strong, confident, fearless wolf. Richard cleared his throat and said, "Hello there. It looks like we meet again." The wolf's head snapped toward him. His amber-colored eyes widened, considering Richard, then seemed to fasten on him. Richard said, suddenly not at all certain how to proceed. The wolf gave a long, low growl and dropped down on all fours, his tail twitching back and forth behind him, his eyes glowing like headlights in the forest gloom. Richard's nerve broke. What had he been thinking? This was no protector. It was a hungry animal. Richard turned and took off back toward the village, but now the wolf gave a great leap and landed in the path directly in front of him, lips curled back from his sharp white teeth, snarling and slavering. He crouched down to spring. Richard, too terrified to scream, spun around again and this time raced up the path. The wolf threw his head back and howled a long song of hunger and hunting that accompanied Richard in his flight around a bend in the path and out of sight. Oh! Then the wolf chuckled, stood up on his hind legs again, and strolled off under the trees. Richard ran and ran, the terrifying cry of the wolf floating around him on all sides. First, he was too panicky to think, but as he grew tired, and as his sprint settled down into a steady jog, it occurred to him that here he was, just as he'd always feared he would be, panic-stricken in the forest. And yet, he wasn't lost. He was running along a path. Stranger still, he wasn't trying to find his way out of the forest, but was traveling deeper into it. At last he could make out a little cottage up ahead, nestled among the trees, with lights burning in all the windows. He ran up to the front door and pounded on it. "Grandmother, it's me! It's me!" he cried.
"Goodness dear, whatever is the matter?"
Eveline asked Richard with real concern.
"You're in a state."
Richard was even more now so than a moment before.
"But it's the wolf," he explained, in case he was the only one present who had taken in that fact.
"Yes, it's the wolf.
agreed his grandmother, not quite catching his point, but willing to humor him because she loved him.
"I've been telling him how difficult things are for you in the village."
Richard blushed a deep shade of red.
"Dear,"
she said, patting his arm,
"there's no shame in having trouble, just in not doing anything about it."
"I said to Eveline, it sounded like you were a young fellow who could use a bowl of wolf soup,"
said the wolf, smiling pleasantly at Richard with all those sharp white teeth.
"It's a special dish I make. Buck you right up."
Eveline brought out her biggest pot and set it on the stove.
"So, Richard,"
continued the wolf, rubbing his paws together briskly,
"have you brought anything in your basket we might use for soup?"
Richard said, "Well, I brought grandmother a chicken. We could use that, I guess."
"Well, I don't know,"
said the wolf, shaking his big flame-red head and looking at the others.
"That'd give us chicken soup, wouldn't it? What else did you bring?"
Some vegetables."
"Well, that would be good if we wanted to make vegetable soup,"
said the wolf, frowning thoughtfully as he considered the matter. He lifted the lid from the pot and leaped up onto the stove.
"If we want good old-fashioned wolf soup, and of course we do,"
he added, stepping daintily into the pot, one big foot at a time,
"I really do believe we'll have to use a wolf."
And though it didn't seem that the pot was capacious enough to hold anyone near his size, the wolf sank down into it until only his head and the paw holding the lid could be seen above the rim.
"Strong meat makes strong soup,"
he whispered in that tone of voice reserved for revealing only the most important secrets. Then the lid clanked down into place.
"Excuse me,"
Richard said, shaking his head as if to clear it after a nap. He ran over to the stove and raised the lid. The pot was filled to the brim with a rich brown broth, steaming and simmering. The aroma rising from the soup was the smell of what Richard had always been hungriest for, though even now he couldn't name what that was. But he could feel the empty place deep inside himself that yearned for it. Meanwhile, his grandmother had set the table and gotten bowls down from her cupboard. Now she took the big silver ladle out of the drawer.
"We're not really going to eat that, are we?"
Richard asked fearfully, deeply disturbed by the prospect.
"Why, of course we are, dear,"
said Eveline, ladling soup into bowls.
"After all the trouble he's gone to, it would be terribly rude not to have a bowl of soup."
"But it's the wolf,"
Richard protested.
"I thought he was your friend."
"He still is, dear,"
his grandmother pointed out in her practical way as she carried the steaming bowls over to the table where Jeff had already taken his seat.
"That's the point."
"We all need a little wolf soup, Richard,"
said Jeff, looking at him from the table.
"It's how I can work hard all day, and how I can be myself in the village, no matter what anyone else thinks about it.
And I certainly couldn't live on my own and do for myself every day if I never had any,"
added his grandmother.
"Now, do sit down, dear, because the soup's getting cold."
For the life of him, Richard couldn't work out the sense of what they were saying, although both seemed certain of it themselves. But what finally convinced him to take his place at the table was the aroma of the soup itself, which made him more deeply hungry than he could remember ever having been. So he sat and he ate. The soup was more delicious than anything, savory and strong and wonderfully fortifying, and he was glad to have it. By the time he had finished, Richard felt satisfied in a way he had never felt before, as if the place that had always been empty was full now. Not of wolf soup, but of Richard himself. Still, he shook his head as he set down his spoon.
"It was really good," he said, "and I'd have another bowl if I wasn't so full, but I'm still sorry the wolf had to die so it could be made." "That was so like him, though, wasn't it?"
someone asked in a reverent tone of voice.
"Selfless, thoughtful, always thinking of the other guy. And actually, not too bad looking when he took some time with his hair."
Richard turned around and there was the wolf, looking at him from the soup pot, the lid perched on his head like a hat. The wolf blew him a kiss and waggled his paws.
"Hi,"
he said, then stood, stepped from the pot with dry fur, none the worse for having been an entree, and jumped down to the floor.
"Now don't go trying this at home,"
he warned, setting the lid back onto the pot.
"You're all right," Richard said in amazement.
"Why, thank you, Richard,"
said the wolf, leaning down and pinching his cheek.
"I think you're pretty swell, too."
"No, I mean, we ate some of you, but you're still alive."
"Yes,"
the wolf agreed, pirouetting so Richard could see him from all sides. "Everything in place, as usual."
"Aren't I? So are you, for that matter. But it's time for goodbyes. Eveline, dear, so nice to see you again,"
he fluttered, making kissing noises in the air at each side of her face. Then he turned to Jeff and said in a growly voice,
"You're looking good, bro."
Last, he turned to Richard and said, paws held wide in invitation,
"I feel like we know each other so well now. Give me a hug."
Richard stood eagerly and went to the wolf to hug him. The wolf caught him up against the fur of his chest and lifted him into the air.
"Whoa!" cried Richard as his feet left the floor.
"No, Richard,"
laughed the wolf.
"Like this."
He raised his muzzle to the ceiling and howled, sending a thrill through Richard that felt like a tuning fork in his chest.
"Oh!"
After the wolf left, Jeff thanked Eveline for having him over and said he had to be going as well.
"Do you want to walk back to the village together?"
Richard asked.
"Sure,"
said Jeff, smiling.
"That'd be great."
"Good night, dear,"
said Eveline, kissing Richard on the cheek.
"I'll see you next time I come into town."
"Or maybe I'll just walk back and visit you before then,"
Richard said, as Eveline stood on her front step, waving goodbye. The boys walked home through the evening forest together, fireflies lighting up the path for them. They talked intimately. Richard found himself laughing out loud and deeply serious at turns at the things that Jeff revealed about himself and at the revelations he elicited from Richard. So it was that, when they reached the village, he only dimly remembered that he once had avoided Jeff so as not to be seen and associated with him. Now the idea that passing villagers might link him with Jeff made him proud, because he had discovered as they walked and talked what a fine man Jeff was. They paused on the street corner where they would part ways, each going on to his own home.
"You doing anything tomorrow night?"
Jeff asked.
"No,"
said Richard hopefully, happily, because he saw the regard Jeff had for him.
"What about getting together for dinner after I get off work in the forest?"
Jeff suggested. And now he was happy also, seeing even before he finished speaking that Richard was accepting.
"Good, I'm glad that's settled,"
Richard laughed. There was only one cafe in the village where everyone ate when they ate out. Richard and Jeff made plans to meet there.
"See you then,"
said Richard as they parted in the village. Richard walked home whistling. How fine it would be next night to sit at a table in the cafe with Jeff and talk with him again, sometimes serious, sometimes laughing, sometimes reaching across the table to take his hand. He turned the corner, and there was Clarence, for once with no apprentice bullies by his side. Richard noticed that Clarence looked rather lonely as he walked along under the street lamps by himself, even a little sad. But when he glanced up and saw Richard, his mood elevated noticeably.
"Cupcake,"
he cried happily. Suddenly, Richard was aware of how acutely weary he was of being called Cupcake, as if the name had over-exercised a muscle in his ear that really needed to be given a rest.
"Hello, Clarence,"
said Richard, walking up to him with such an upsurge of energy that he was nose-to-nose with Clarence almost before he realized it. And though Richard hadn't suddenly grown any taller or Clarence any smaller, Clarence backed up a step.
"We're having a problem," Richard declared. "You don't seem to be able to pronounce my name correctly. It's not Cupcake. It's Richard."
It occurred to him out of nowhere that if he had always dreamed of kissing a boy, here was Clarence, of all people, with an easy reach and no one around to stop him. That was a ridiculous idea, of course, since Jeff was the one he really wanted to kiss. In fact, it was so ridiculous, imagining the expression Clarence would have if Richard did grab him and plant a big wet one right on his mouth, that Richard couldn't help giving Clarence a big, radiant, toothy smile. Clarence wasn't used to being confronted so directly by Richard, and he certainly had never expected Richard to start telling him what to call him. It was very unsettling. When Richard smiled at him, it reminded Clarence of the way the wolf had bared his teeth, and he was filled with an unreasonable fear that Richard was going to bite him on this deserted street corner, with no one around to come and save him if he should call for help. So he said,
Richard, sorry.
That's okay,
Richard said heartily, suddenly in a ferociously good mood. Although he had intended to speak in the same pleasant and friendly manner he had always used, his voice came out in a deep growl. This was strange because he didn't feel angry at Clarence. Quite the contrary. For the first time, it seemed as if he might actually like to get to know Clarence, now that he wasn't intimidated by him.
Heavens, is that my voice?
He wondered in amazement as Clarence hurried off. Yes, it had come out of his mouth, and that meant it was his voice. Then, for no reason he could think of except that he felt like it, Richard raised his face to the sky and the stars and howled. It was a long howl, as if it had been pent up inside of him for a long time, a song he had always known but had never before been able to sing. And then an odd thing happened. Someone else on the next street, Jeff perhaps, who apparently knew the words to this song, took up the howl so that it was prolonged in the night air. Someone else, two streets over in the other direction, came to his window or front door and raised his voice in another verse of the howl, and then someone else did, and someone else again. The streets of the village rang with an anthem to the joy of life, and villagers meeting on corners or outside the market stopped and remarked to one another, what a remarkably fine evening it was. When Richard got home, he remembered his red velvet jacket that hung in the back of his closet. He took it out and tried it on, and even before he looked at himself in the mirror, he felt the jacket's perfect fit.
"This will be just the thing to wear tomorrow when I meet Jeff for dinner," he decided.
It was. From then on, Richard lived his dream and wore his red jacket everywhere. The people of the village got so used to seeing him in it that he became known as Red Jacket, or RJ, but his close friends always called him
Wolf.
Okay, so finally we have the questions for the CD giveaway contest for Bear Radio episode number 69. First, what is the number of artists on bearradio.net? It's a 3-digit number. And question number 2, what are the number of songs on the Bear Radio playlist? That is a 4-digit number. Go to bearradio.net to find the answers while you listen to more great eclectic gay radio, and email us at bearsoup@gmail.com with bearsoup69 contest in your subject line. Be sure to include your mailing address and do tell us how you listen to the show. Thanks and good luck.
Why can't we see? Oh, 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 oh.
for Bears on Bears in the first ever Gay Bees. So, folks, let's get busy. Head to TLA Books Online. There's a link on the website. And vote for Bears on Bears, early and often, as they say. Show your bear book pride. And thanks so much. There's just too much difference between what we say. Shoutouts to music by Leslie Ann from her fabulous CD, Queen of the World. Check out her music at leslieann.com. That's LEZLEEANNE.com. Evan and Robert at House of 1833 of fabulous Mystic, Connecticut, Bed and Breakfast. The Northeast Ursa Men voted Bear Club of the Year once again. Thanks to Joe at BearRadio.net. And as always, to my husband, Rocco. You've been listening to Bear Soup with Ron Serratia, episode number 69. Check out the Bear Soup page on my little home blog, www.ronserratia.com. Bear Soup is news, interviews, skews, and schmooze for the online Ursine community with your host, Ron Serratia. Bubbles for the Bear Soup hot tub are powered by our sponsor, Bare Bones Books. Check out their fine titles by the freakishly good-looking bear authors at barebonesbooks.com. That's spelled BearBonesBooks.com. Look for Bear Soup and Bare Bones Books also on Facebook. And please feel free to email me at bearsoup@gmail.com. That's it for Bear Soup. Thanks for listening. Remember, sometimes you eat the bear, sometimes the bear eats you.